they're on planes, they're on buses, they're in restaurants, they're in hotels, they're going home to their families, they're socializing as usual. And that's the environment where you are seeing this outbreak with the Marlins.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we're going to speak with someone who loves sports, but has also been highly skeptical about playing them during this pandemic, WAMC sports commentator Jane McManus. For the past year and a half, she's been director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication. Over her career, she's worked for ESPN, the New York Daily News, and several other outlets. We spoke Wednesday afternoon. Hi, Jane, how are you?
I'm good. Good to be here.
Before we talk about the world of sports right now, how are you preparing for the fall semester at Marist, and what will things look like for you?
Well, right now we are planning on having students on campus and having classes on campus. We're trying to do a mix, I think, like many communities are and many campuses and also local districts even, trying to do a mix of in-seat classes and also distance learning, and having each class be available to a student in the way that they want to access it, whether that's actually being on campus or from a digital environment. So that's one of the things we're planning for. And for a lot of our events that we're looking to do, you know, how much learning takes place outside of the classroom, we're looking to make those accessible also in a lot of different ways. So a lot of creative thinking, you know, a lot of like infrastructure upgrades so that we can be safe on campus, whether that's, you know, changing out some of the air conditioning systems in buildings so that there is more circulation of outside air, you know, which is one of those things. So following the science, trying to figure out how to have students and teachers come together in an environment that is both safe and productive.
You teach sports media, and for the past few months, by and large, there were very few games, and for a long stretch, no games for people to cover. And it made people get pretty creative in how they covered sports, what they did with airtime. What did you make of the sports media landscape over the past few months?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I tuned in last night, and I was watching, you know, coverage of a video game, essentially. And I think, you know, that's kind of one of the ways that sports have been covered, right? We've learned to access sports in all of these different ways and access competition in different ways. And I think people have spent a lot of time over the last couple of months just trying to get creative in the way that we can access sports and talk about them. I also think there has, you know, because there's been a bit of a vacuum, it's allowed for sports to again take part in some of those cultural conversations. For example, with Black Lives Matter, we've seen a lot of engagement from athletes and from different broadcasters about those issues and about individual players telling their own stories and their own ways of advocating. And then, of course, there's always debate around a lot of those issues within a sports context. So I think, you know, and then, of course, with the actual virus, with the actual planning to get sports back, there's a lot of conversation ways of covering that. You also saw different sports entities and the way that they covered things like the NFL draft and looking for those moments in the sports calendar where you could actually cover sports even though they aren't being played. So, you know, what does that mean in terms of, you know, whether it's trades or you know, any other free agent signings, that sort of thing. And that's, you know, certainly some of the ways, but it definitely is not something that can go on forever. There need to be games, there needs to be relevance. And I think you saw in sports media trying to find a way to grab hold of that.
Do you think that the death of George Floyd and the national reckoning that's brought about from, you know, everything from Black Lives Matter to changing the name of the Washington football team and also the impacts of the virus, has that finally ended the debate about keeping politics and sports separate, which is something you hear so much?
I don't think it'll ever end the debate, because when someone says that, at least, you know, and again, part of my job is as a columnist. But I whenever someone says that, you know, you need to keep sports out of politics, what I hear is that it's a way of trying to shut someone down, trying to shut down an opinion, trying to shut down a discussion, because sports are a very big part of politics. You know, these leagues employ lobbyists in Washington, where they try to get laws passed and they try to massage rules and antitrust regulations that they are take part in. So they're very much a part of politics. You have owners and teams that are giving large amounts of money to different candidates, campaigns, and, you know, and are very active on the local level. You have stadiums that take public money and public financing for transportation to stadiums. There is no clear line between sports and politics. There are only people who want to shut down a conversation around a particular area. So for me, you know, I think in some ways with the death, the killing of George Floyd and what we've seen around that, I do think it's easier to see some of these structures and how they're set up, and it's harder to shut people down. And I also see you see less of a willingness to be silenced. And so to me, that's a good thing, because so often athletes have been given a platform without being given a voice. And I think it's important that we hear what their experience is. And, you know, for good or for bad, a discussion on both sides. I mean, athletes aren't saying the same thing. They're not all speaking in one voice. You know, the conversation around NASCAR, for example, I think was really important. And I think it's, you know, it's good that we're having those discussions, and it goes farther. It goes into Confederate monuments and what the status for that is. Or, you know, my father lives in Washington, D.C., near Lincoln Park, where there's a statue of Abraham Lincoln with a freed enslaved person, and that person is kneeling. And there's a discussion about, you know, what is the impact of that kind of representation of a freed person. And I think those are important conversations to have, and we're having them now.
Let's talk about the state of play. As we speak, this is Wednesday afternoon. Major League Baseball has just been playing for a week and is already grappling with the viral outbreak among the Marlins. And of course, there's question about anyone the Marlins may have come in contact with. So other games have been canceled and teams have had to shift cities right now. It didn't take very long for that to happen. At the same time, tomorrow, the NBA, which you've chronicled over your career, is supposed to get going in a bubble. So rather than having the teams traveling from city to city, they're all on one site. What do you make of what you're seeing so far in baseball and what it might tell us about what could happen in basketball?
Right. And also what can happen in the rest of the world, right? We want to get schools opened up, you know, whether they're elementary or high school or college campuses. And I think that this is actually really instructive in some ways, because what we're seeing from the NBA, where you have had quite a bit of testing and you have a very controlled environment, right? Like the NBA players and everyone who's been put into that bubble, and you only get in by testing, and you have to sequester for 3 days and have two negative tests before you can actually be in the NBA bubble. But those, they're all monitored. All of those participants are monitored, and they wear technology that tells them how close they're getting to other people. And it sounds an alert if you're not socially distancing from people that you're with. And so that's a pretty controlled environment in terms of what we're seeing for the return of sports and also testing, the frequent testing. And I think you're seeing some success there, right? Knock on wood, where you haven't had positive tests yet after people have entered the bubble environment. Now, Major League Baseball is not a bubble environment. Players are coming and going before games and after games. They're traveling to different stadiums with their teams. They're on planes. They're on buses. They're in restaurants. They're in hotels. They're going home to their families. They're socializing as usual. And that's the environment where you are seeing this outbreak with the Marlins. And I think that tells us something, right, about the way that we're interacting. And it's that, you know, there's a lot of community spread right now in the United States. We are leading the world in cases of coronavirus right now. Bringing sports back without having them be in a bubble is obviously
is not a good situation. It's a situation where you have one of the 30 teams already facing a major outbreak in just the first week of play. That's not a good sign. What can we take from this to learn about how we're going to have to test? What movement is going to have to be like? How sequestered people are going to have to be in a group setting in order to make schools safe, to make, you know, the reopening of the economy safe? I think hopefully we can take some lessons because the evidence is right in front of us.
There's this quote by Sean Doolittle, a reliever for the Nationals, that's been getting a lot of attention. He said, sports is basically a reward for a well-functioning society, which is something we don't have right now in many respects. And I'm a sports fan. I'm like you. I love the games and I love the storylines. And I was really happy to see baseball come back. But I have this just nagging sense that, you know, mathematically, someone is likely to get very ill or die in order to have this abbreviated season this year.
Well, absolutely. And I made that same point in an April commentary that I did for WAMC, which was that, yes, sports, we have sports because we have the planes that can take us to games and can get players between games, that have the roads that can get goods between different cities, and we can get food to different stadiums where people have the time to be able to spend and the money to be able to spend in a leisure environment of going to a game, where we don't have to worry about our health when we are sitting in large groups of people. Those are the things that have made sports successful, and those are the things that we don't have right now. I agree with you. I think there is this sense in the world among a certain group of sports fans that, well, if anybody catches the virus, they're going to be fine. And that's not what the evidence tells us. There are a lot of players, there are a lot of coaches, there are people around teams who may have pre-existing conditions that are very well controlled with medicine, or, you know, where they don't talk publicly about that sort of thing. And I think you're seeing that now with the players who are opting out of playing in the NFL this season because they don't want to expose their family members. Again, obesity is something that is a factor with COVID, where your chances of getting disease are higher if you are obese or if you come from a community of color. Those are two areas that we've seen be ravaged by this. And I think you see that there are players who, especially in the NFL, where you have linemen who can come in at 300 pounds, you know, that works really well in a sports context for that specific role that they fill. However, in the context of this pandemic, it is something that it heightens the danger for them. And so I think, you know, some of them are making just really smart decisions for their own families to opt out. And, you know, we've also seen there's an NFL player who's been who's a medical doctor, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif with the Chiefs. And he's come out and said, you know, he was working on the front lines while, you know, the pandemic was raging. And he said he can't see himself playing in the NFL this season when he knows the stress that an outbreak puts on the medical system. And I think that's another really great point, which is that by concentrating on sports and getting sports back, what are the compromises that we're making in terms of our society elsewhere, whether it's with testing? You know, are these tests, should they really all be going to athletes to be tested every day? If we put those tests, for example, in an educational setting, being able to bring schools back, are there other compromises that we're making? You know, I think of, for example, Dr. Anthony Fauci. A lot of these leagues have been relying on him really heavily in order to get play back. Well, is that the best use of his time, having the top, you know, specialist in infectious diseases consulting with sports league as opposed to consulting with other areas in our society that are also trying to look back to get back to functioning? These are all questions I think that are being brought up right now, because when these sports are being planned back in May, we were in a very different environment virus-wise. Things were going down. You could see how we could bring sports back. Now, things are, you know, the virus is the transmit. We're hitting 150,000 people who've died of this today. And I just think that's a very different environment to be bringing sports back in.
You know, this all started basically in March, and one of the first major dominoes to go was the NCAA tournament. Do you think we can realistically expect college football and college basketball, which are the main money sports to be held this year?
I think it's too soon to say with college basketball, but I think with college football, we've seen enough, and we should be able to make that call now. The New York Times came out today with a survey where they're looking at all of the transmissions that have taken place on college campuses during the summer. And they looked particularly at Division I college football and found 630 positive tests associated with Division I football across 68 teams. That's players, staff, and coaches. And to me, you know, when you look at that number, I think it's very difficult to say that players who are not compensated should be absorbing that kind of risk because schools are afraid of the economics of not playing football this year. I think it's a real ethical question, and I don't think that, you know, those student athletes who play football for Division I, you know, they don't have representation. They are not making money. They don't have a union that's looking out for them. They have to depend on their college to make the right decision and to provide a safe environment. And too few of those schools are able to do that in a regular way. And we see that from the numbers.
That's our friend Jane McManus, WAMC sports commentator and the head of the Center for Sports Communication at Marist College in Poughkeepsie. Jane, thank you for taking all this time. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Anytime, Ian. Thank you so much.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.